Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
All right, shall we dump into it?
Let's duel it.
Wrong anime.
Wait a second. Hold on.
Actually, who do you think Netflix would cast as a live action Yu-Gi-Oh?
Probably Logan Paul.
Welcome to TV Talk. I'm Bo.
And I'm Bell.
Bell! Man, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fantastamundo.
Man, it is so glad for me to hear that you are doing fantastamundo. I, too, am doing just okay. But you know what? I'm excited to be here and talking with you, man. When we first announced to the people that we were going through a bit of a rebrand here, that we were kind of changing the focus or maybe like bringing the podcast into focus as it's kind of evolved over time into kind of more of a general TV talk with some good panel to screen reviews mixed in for good measure. You know, thinking ahead to like the series that we would be talking about, was really exciting. We're experiencing a unique, a golden era of television, man. It's really a beautiful time. Of course, if you consider streaming services television, which we certainly do here. And here's the thing with all of this, man. We were looking down like, all right, what do we want to talk about? What shows are coming up that we're like super hyped for? And of course, we had Hawkeye at that point. You know, a lot of hype. We also had Book of Boba Fett, right? Which is, you know, going on currently.
Book of Boba Fett, absolutely.
Yeah. We had up and coming, you know, future seasons of The Mandalorian. You got the next season of Westworld. You got all kinds of shows. Yes.
Yeah. There. I mean, at the time, the horizon was vast, and it even still today, there's still more stuff on that horizon.
Absolutely, man. The horizon looks good, but on the horizon at the time was the live action incarnation of Cowboy Bebop created by Netflix. We were so hyped for this thing, man. Like I know I definitely was. Cowboy Bebop, probably the only, like, one of two animes that I actually really, really like. It is the anime that anime fan, like non-anime fans have to admit they like, you know?
Yeah.
That in fact, I believe you were the one that actually introduced me to Cowboy Bebop, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So what about you, man? What was your first introduction to Cowboy Bebop?
I want to say I saw it on Adult Swim. I think it was on Adult Swim.
Yeah,
on their anime block.
That sounds familiar. Okay. Yeah.
So, and then from there, I bought or pirated. I acquired them. Because, you know, the DVDs are super expensive when you're, you know, when you're younger and you just don't have money. And so, you know, when like an import DVD costs $45, you know, yeah. And it didn't even have, you know, it's got like four episodes on it or something.
You realize, so, like last week you came on here and talked about an issue with a drug overdose, and now you're like talking about your issue with
an overdose.
Well, regardless, my point is that like you're coming, like when you go to trial, they're gonna pull up the TV Talk podcast for all the evidence. It's just all here. This is it, right here.
Well, you know, and I had to go dig up one of the bodies because I accidentally left a lot of money on the courts. And so, you know,
your lawyer's going to be like, what evidence do they have? And they're just going to click play and they'll be like, yep, all right, have fun in prison. Yeah, no.
The statute of limitations has way since been had for piracy.
I don't think that's how that works. But regardless, yes, of course, you acquired, Bell. You acquired said DVDs.
Yeah,
back in the day. And but did you literally like happen upon it, or was it, because I know we had a mutual friend who was super big in anime, who also kind of introduced a couple of us into some different things.
Yeah, you know, I don't remember specifically who introduced me to it first, or if I came across it on Adult Swim. I'm gonna guess that it was Adult Swim, like Toonami kind of block. I'm gonna guess that it was Toonami because I'm fairly certain Cowboy Bebop is the only anime that I can watch and actually prefer the English dub on.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, the voice acting was incredible.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and that's like a very, that's a rarity for me. Like anytime I watch anime on Netflix or you know, wherever else, like Crunchyroll or something like that, I always, almost always prefer the Japanese original voices with the English subtitles. And Cowboy Bebop is the one exception. Like I actually went, when I rewatched a lot of the episodes from the anime, I put on the Japanese original audio and I was like, something's not hitting right. And then I put on the English dub and I was like, that's why.
there it is.
Because you know, the English dub is what came on Toonami, and that just cemented in my brain, like, that is Cowboy Bebop, that is what Spike sounds like, that is what Jet sounds like, that is what Faye sounds like, that is what Ed sounds like. All of those, like all those characters are just concrete in my head. Whereas, you know, other animes, it's not the same. Like I have to watch the Japanese original audio for most other animes,
which is kind of wild because, like, thinking back to it, like the you know, Spike, I blank on the voice actor whose name who played Spike, but he's done a lot of voice acting gigs and, like, you know, basically whenever they need, like, a, you know, just kind of a BA kind of grizzled character, they always get that dude. And it's like, oh, yep, they're calling Spike. They're getting Spike's voice in there. <It's> like, he kind of, yeah, to some extent, typecast is that. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I mean, hey, it's voice acting work. You're not going to complain about it.
Yeah. You know, and like he was a great, let's see here. I'm trying to feed Steve Blum.
Okay. Yeah. Fantastic voice actor.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic voice actor. Like, he is my Spike Spiegel.
Yeah.
And he's done all sorts of other stuff. He was also the voice of Tom. Who was the robot who hosted Toonami?
Right. I remember that. Yeah. That was kind of a little bit almost, do you think it was because he was also Spike, or do you think it was just, you know, just happened to work out that way?
You know, I don't know. That is a good question though.
Interesting.
I think he may have gotten that before the Toonami gig because I might be wrong, but if the Toonami gig or Cowboy Bebop is like what just exploded his career.
Well, okay, so let's talk about Cowboy Bebop, man. So I mean, obviously you say it's you know, it holds a special place in your anime heart. For me, man, it is like one of the most quintessential cartoon television shows of all time, possibly even one of, if not the greatest television show of all time. Is that too much to say?
No, I don't think so.
I mean, that gets tossed around a lot, but you think about like a character driven a narrative that was able to kind of walk the line for both like spaghetti Western, but then also kind of like those one-off, you know, pseudo serialized shows. Like it was really, I mean, it's extremely, extremely well-written. The characters felt very real. The world was very well thought out. They did not hold your hand in explaining the situation at all in terms of the universe. But at the same time, they were able to bring you in so naturally that you felt instantly immersed. And, you know, pulling off of iconic characters from film noir, from cowboy films. This everything that I could ever want in a television show, in storytelling in general, exists in Cowboy Bebop.
Yeah, like Shinichiro Watanabe, like, wanted, it's all over the anime. Like when you watch the anime, like the English, like, you know, scripts that you see in the background is talking about how, like, you know, we're going to make a new genre of of show, and it will be called Cowboy Bebop. Right. And like that's what he was trying to do. Right? He was trying to create this just amalgam of just crazy, like, brand new kind of show, like concept idea. And it was sci-fi, it was cyberpunk, it was Western, it was like all of these things, noir, you know, all of these sort of genres kind of just rolled and mashed together. And you put that on top of like you said, well-written characters and an excellent, you know, through line throughout the entire thing. Even though there were, you know, one-off episodes and bottle episodes and things like that, you had this through line of the, you know, quote, main story. And it was perfect. You know,
so good.
Like, it was perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So this is the problem that I think that anyone who wanted to ever attempt to make this into live action, it was going to run into, because I, you know, and this is just me, and I realize that I am a poor judge of this, of what I'm about to say, But for me, this feels like Cowboy Bebop is like the quintessential anime. It is like the pinnacle of what you can do in anime. Now, a lot of people are going to like scoff at that and point out all of the problems with me especially being the one to say that, especially when like, this is like the only anime I like. So how can that be the case? How on earth can I be the one to definitively say that? Well, I'm just saying for me, that seems to be the case. Like it is one way or the other, even if you don't necessarily hold it in that high regard, everyone holds this show in high regard. It is literally impossible to make any kind of like, you know, live action or just general adaptation of this series and have it even come close to living up to the original. And I think that's important to acknowledge before talking about what we're about to talk about.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, it's one of those when people say like anime, isn't that like just cartoons? There's this Cowboy Bebop. I say, okay, yeah, you know, it's not just cartoons. It's not like Pokemon or Digimon or any other Mon.
hey, Digimon was pretty good. All right, yeah, keep going.
Yeah, but it's not like anime isn't intended for. I mean, there are anime intended for children, like Pokemon, Digimon, etc. Sure. Yeah. But there's also just like you would say, there's TV shows geared towards children. There's TV shows geared towards adults, and anime has the same thing. And so, like when some people will associate anime as like kids' cartoons because it's animated, and that's kind of how like there are no adult animation shows in America.
I think that was true in the 90s. Do you think that's still true now, though? That people still have that stigma?
I don't know. I'm basing this off of me in the 90s because that right. was, you know, it was really hard to like, you know, explain, oh, yeah, anime is like anime. What's that? Aren't those like kids shows? And, you know, that was my experience explaining it in the past. But yes, I think it has become way more of a, I guess.
Accepted? I mean, like, yeah. I don't know what the right phraseology here is, but yeah, I mean, like it does seem that people understand. I mean, look, you got Family Guy. Obviously, The Simpsons has been around for a gajillion years. Like, you know, there is a general understanding of like cartoons are not just for kids. You can't just sit your kid down in front of a cartoon these days and think, ah, here, watch yourself a Family Guy. You know what I mean? Like,
watch your sillies. yeah. No, for sure. And I think that has changed a lot. Yeah. But, you know, if you ever do run across someone who isn't as exposed to animation intended for, I don't want to say adult animation because that just comes off weird, but animation intended for adult audiences.
Right. Covering your bases there. I got you.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, I would recommend for like a movie or for a show, Cowboy Bebop, and for a movie like Grave of the Fireflies, because that is one of the most depressing films you'll ever see. And it's extremely emotional and it's animated. And so like, you know, a lot of people don't think that, you know, oh, it's animation. It's whatever. You can't pull on the same heartstrings as regular movies. And I challenge anyone who doesn't think that anime is up there as far as like with film, like comparable with film and things like that, to watch either of those, like the show or Grave of the Fireflies, and not cry.
Well, like Spirited Away. I recently watched Spirited Away for the first time. It's another fantastic, that won an Oscar. You know what I mean? Like that was a big that was a big get. But
pretty much any Miyazaki movie is gold.
But for a time, man, this was the one. Like you said, like if you were talking to somebody back in the day that thought, oh, either, you know, cartoons are for kids or anime is just, you know, lame, you know, and just kind of too, you know, over the top, you know, like the whole Goku and the ball thing that he throws in the air.
And granted, I like Dragon Ball Z, but like,
no, I know you do. Yeah. I'm not bashing it.
it's not on the same level as Cowboy Bebop at all.
Exactly. Like Dragon Ball is a thing, but I think in America, like Dragon Ball is what most people probably would associate back in the day with anime. And so like, and that appeals to a certain, it appealed to a certain kind of person at the time. And I think like now, like Cowboy Bebop is something that you could put in front of anybody. It was something you could put in front of anybody and be like, no, it's not just for nerds. Watch this. And it would blow people's minds, man. Yeah. So, all right. So let's talk about this. Live action Cowboy Bebop. What was your expectations going into the show?
Man, I don't know. I was kind of holding, cause like I hadn't watched the original Cowboy Bebop in so long that I was kind of holding back my expectations. Like honestly, I was thinking about not watching it through because I wanted just to see what they did and then, you know, go back and watch the original and kind of compare and contrast. Like that was my idea at first, was to watch the Netflix show, then rewatch the original series and, kind of, you know, see how it's going. And with that in mind, I didn't want to set expectations for what I was looking for two reasons. One, you know, I wanted to be open to, you know, whatever interpretation that they're going to go with, because I know it's not going to be a scene for scene remake of the show. That's impossible. Right.
Right.
And, I also didn't like, I knew how much I liked the original, but it had been so long that it was one of those, it wasn't fresh in my mind. So how much of that is nostalgia and how much of that is, you know, actual good show, you know? And so I kind of went in with no expectations whatsoever. I just like, I wanted, like, I thought John Cho would be great for Spike.
Yes.
I thought Mustafa would be great for Jet.
Incredible. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And that was my, like, those are my expectations. Like if I had gone to, like, I knew that Mufasa was going to be great and I knew that John Cho was going to be great as well. And that was pretty much it going in.
Dude, he like looked like he stepped off as Jet Black, man. He looked like he stepped out of the screen, out of the animation. Like,
oh yeah.
The costume design. All right. Let's all right. So people can probably kind of tell based on the way we're setting this up that we're going in a bit of a negative direction. So let's subvert some expectations here and start talking about like what we absolutely love about the show. Cause like, let me tell you, the costume design, like the world building, the absolute, like just love and appreciation for the source material. Like this felt, through all of its flaws, which we'll talk about, it felt very much like it was made by people who loved like the aesthetic, the show, the source material. Like, man, the costume, I mean, I keep going back to this, but man, the costume design was spot on. And they didn't even try to like hide away from it, man. They had a Spike wearing like the exact same clothes every single episode. They had them all wearing the exact same clothes every single
episode. I loved it. Like,
fantastic. Yes.
The production design, the sets, like costumes, all of that was just a glowing love letter to the anime. And I loved that about it. I thought that was great. Like the ship design, like all of that.
Ships, dude. And oh man, when they're inside like the Bebop, like in the little hangout area and everything.
Yeah.
And it's wild. And this is what's done so well is because if you go back and you watch the anime, it's not exact. Like it's not like they specifically like got every single aspect of that meeting room right. But it feels right. And that is how you take something like animated or a comic book, whatever it is. It's not about getting it perfect. It's about making it feel right. And that is what they did so well in the set design and the costume design of this show. And like, this is not like, you know, if you haven't seen it, this is not just like throwing out like, oh, well, those are like the low tier awards that you're just trying to find. No, it's actually like phenomenal. There's like people need to win awards for this show from that standpoint.
Because we're so used to seeing comic book movies take a quote more realistic approach right. to superhero comic or superhero costumes. And you very rarely get something that is like screen accurate, like kind of like at the end of X-Men, Astonishing X-Men run where they have like the, like Cyclops is like the big X.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, like it was at the end, I think it was in a trailer there when they're in the danger room and like they show off those costumes and you're like Nightcrawler's costume was fantastic. And right. like all of them, it was like that Astonishing X-Men Joss Whedon run, which I probably shouldn't mention his name, current events, you know, all that stuff.
Have you read that article in Vulture or whatever it was?
I read clips of it on Twitter and I was about to throw up. I was like, oh, God,
it's a long read. Yeah. No. Yeah. Anyway, we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about Cowboy Bebop. Yes.
I'll reel this. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I'm used to as a comic book, you know, a fan in comic book movies to getting not. You know, like they're inspired by the comic book, but they're not really, you know, comic accurate.
Right.
Costumes here, they're like, no, we're making anime accurate costumes, with the exception of Faye, which I totally get why they didn't do that. And I appreciate why they didn't do that. You know, I mean, you don't need that per se, but yeah. And so that was super cool. And, you know, sometimes you might see it where like they wear normal clothes and then they suit up. But this time, no, Spike in the anime always wears his suit. And Spike in the show always wears his suit.
Wears his suit.
That's it was right, great. Man. It was so great. It was perfect. And like those are the kinds of things that it's so weird about this show because like you see all these things and the love and dedication that they poured into it. And
okay, all right, yeah. And transition. So let's just start off with this. So Vicious and Julia pop up pretty early on, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a choice, you know.
It is.
That's a choice that happens in this thing. Ed, not in this until the very end, which old Ed.
Yeah.
I guess.
I mean, that's fine. You know, you're gonna have a problem finding an actor that can do like Ed's. Well, I don't know. Maybe not. I don't know anything about kids.
I don't know. Anyway, point is, Ed shows up pretty late, extremely late in the game as a post-credit scene and is much older. And that was a little odd to me. But let's talk about Spike has a daughter. That's new.
Wait, Spike had a daughter?
Oh, no, sorry, not Spike. Jed had a daughter.
Yeah. Jed had a daughter in a, you know, in another family and stuff. And
she wants a doll. We got to get that doll, man. That's a series arc right there.
I mean, that was kind of funny. I mean, yeah, like, I that would have been fine if it had just been like, you know, oh, I got to get this doll for my daughter. And then like, okay, whatever. I don't know, man. Like, I wanted
to like this so much, man.
I did too.
And so, like, that you could tell it'd be one thing if you like this was like a like soulless cash grab, and it's not that. Like, this does, like, this was made with love.
Like, where was the disconnect? Like, that's what I don't understand.
Well, it's like a macaroni, you know, like when the kids make a little macaroni picture of your face, and it's like, well, that definitely doesn't look like me, but I can see the love all over it. You know, that's kind of what this is. With this, I can tell you exactly what the disconnect is, though. I know exactly what happened here. All right. So this is maybe me jumping to the end, because I think there's a lot more to talk about. But I think what happened is somebody wanted to tell a story where, like, basically, like, I want to tell Cowboy Bebop, but like have it like Julia's revenge. And I think that's not a bad concept. I think that's kind of cool, but you don't actually tell Cowboy Bebop and make it Julia's revenge. You make your own story and make your own Julia and tell that story. And like, for example, I mean, like I wrote a play where my whole basis for it was that I wanted a story where it was Casablanca, but Sam kills Rick. But I didn't actually tell the story of Casablanca where Sam kills Rick. I made an entirely different story with entirely original characters in order to do that. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that was a big choice in this series. And at first it was jarring because Julia alive is a major reveal in the anime. And to reveal that from the first episode, just that alone, like, take away the kind of the, you know, Into the Spiegelverse, you know, changes they made and into, like, you know, the whole arc and everything else. But like her reveal, like I was watching this and I was like, oh, if you've not read the anime, I can't recommend this, because like, this is going to spoil a pretty, like, the last episode of the anime. You know what I mean?
Yeah. 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 You know, that was, I'm looking through the episode list because I'm trying to remember when they kind of revealed that Julia was alive.
First episode.
I'm talking about the anime. Yeah.
Next penultimate. I guarantee it was the penultimate episode. I promise you that. I promise you it's the next to last episode is the first time that we get the revelation that Julia's alive.
I don't know if it was next to last.
I would put money on it, maybe. I don't know. All right. I'll put Minecraft diamonds. I don't know. I'll put something on it.
Because like Faye runs into Julia the second to last episode, but like I think that maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
No, because we see Vicious shows up in the first kind of like, I guess, like 1/4 of the anime. And like, that's the thing. He's such a, well, I mean, Vicious presence. Like, he is all, there's something that is, he's almost like death personified. And so by making him more of a full character in this, in the live action series, it kind of declaws him a little bit. You know what I mean?
He was a joke.
Yeah.
Like, he was played off as comic relief in the first several episodes.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, this isn't, like, let me give you a little story of how I had to watch this show.
Okay.
So I watched, I think, the first 2 or 3 episodes, and I was like, I felt weird. It felt really weird. I was like, I love the anime. I was like, is this, did I like the anime because it was like, it's just nostalgia, and the anime is kind of like not good either. And so I started rewatching the anime and I was like, no, this is great. And I, you know, eventually had to go back and finish the show, but it felt kind of like, you know, between watching the anime and watching the show, that like the soul was just sucked out of the anime.
Yeah. Well, you mean the live action?
Sorry. The soul was sucked out of the live action. Like the anime has a lot of soul, right?
Yeah.
And
well, and the other thing too is there's inconsistencies all throughout, right? Like, for example, you mentioned Vicious is kind of played for a joke to some extent. But then you look at like Spike, which is a very it's a very inspired take on the character, but you know, at the same time, was it Cho made it his own in terms of what he did with the character? Yeah. And then you go to Jet, who is like just anime accurate from he's even got the voice, like the way he like does the voice and everything is as if he like walked off the screen. And so like the inconsistencies all around. And then Faye is a very different take on Faye, which again is fine. But I think like this amalgam of being either extremely true or extremely different kind of made for a weird watching experience if you're familiar with the source material, you know?
Yeah. And like Spike having an opportunity to kill Vicious and he doesn't, like in the first couple episodes.
Yeah. I will say the one episode that I thought was actually really good was the next to last live action episode, where it was kind of the prequel, kind of giving you the origin story of Spike and Vicious's relationship.
I agree. I think that one was really, really good. That was one of the gems. There were a couple in there that were, you know, fairly decent.
Were there? Wait. I'm trying to remember.
Cowboy Gospel was okay.
Which one was that one?
That was the very first episode. It's the equivalent of
Yeah. With the terrorist, the tree terrorist people.
Yeah. It's the red eye. Right. Or bloody.
That one, of course. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Asteroid Blues is the one that's based off of in the anime.
Okay. That's right. The first episode did kind of give me hope. Like, okay, I see what they're doing here. This is really impressive. And I was watching it with my wife, who she had seen the anime before or parts of the anime before, but it'd been so long that she didn't remember it. And so like, she like with the whole reveal that, you know, she wasn't actually pregnant, that it was just, you know, the red eye underneath. She was like blown away by that. Like, yeah. I was like, oh yeah. And I was really excited to see her enjoy the anime, like through those fresh eyes, or rather the live action series through the fresh eyes of someone who wasn't familiar with the anime. Whew, but you just, you know, over time, and it very quickly, it just got to be a slog.
Yeah. And that's why, like, you know, I watched the first episode and I was like, okay, cool. Yeah. You know, I'm getting the rhythm. Let's, you know, we'll turn it up. And then like second episode, Julia's alive and Vicious is like played as a punk. And, you know, like, and then I was like, okay, that just felt kind of weird. And then the one where they introduce Ayn, like, that was where I kind of had to stop watching and go back and watch some stuff. Or no, maybe I think it was after Callisto's Soul. That was the one on Ganymede with the bioweapon.
Was the one with Ayn, is that where Faye's mom came into the picture?
No, Faye's mom came into the picture in, I think that was Galileo Hustle episode 7.
I will say that they did, like, you know, some of the licenses they took, which again, we here at TV Talk are never opposed to people taking licenses with characters. Like there's nothing necessarily like they, you know, make it your own. That's perfectly fine. But I think that there's something about the way in which this show presented itself as such, like this true adaptation. And then to like take some major swings out of left part while all, like this weird balance of trying to be both felt off. Like it would have been better if they had completely made it their own, or if they had stayed more true to it. Or I've got a third option, but I'm going to save it for us to talk about later.
Cause like that's the thing is, you know, after I stopped my watch and started the rewatch of the anime, I would go back and I would watch the episodes that were based on the TV show episodes, and the way the TV show did them, I would watch the Netflix episodes that were based off the anime episodes, and the anime ones were just done so much better. Like,
yeah,
the characterization was better. Like the way they solved the problem was better. Like,
and they almost like invite you to compare it, right? Because it is so similar at times.
Yeah. And like Cowboy Gospel, the first episode, the red eye episode, that one, you know, that one was fairly close. And so I was like, okay, cool. Like, you know, there was, it felt the same. And then like, I think the Teddy Bomber thing was something new.
Yeah. I mean like that, it was very different the way they handled the Teddy Bomber.
Yeah.
But it was kind of like that. They're like, oh, hey, here's the Teddy Bomber. We're going to kind of put him in this story. Or like, oh, here's the eco-terrorist. We're going to kind of put him in this story. And that, again, that's fine if done right. But I don't think this done right.
But the one that killed me, that absolutely killed me was the episode. Oh, it was us in the Netflix show, A Sad Clown of Go-Go.
Which was
Pierre Lefeu on the anime. And like Pierre Lefeu is one of my favorite episodes of the anime. And I just didn't really like Sad Clown of Go-Go.
Yeah. I think holistically, anytime they incorporated a lot of those characters, but I mean, I hear you on that one. That one is a much loved of all the villains of the Cowboy Bebop series. It was definitely a fan favorite. I think it was,
well, like the way they explain the backstory of the assassin of Pierre is so interesting in the anime, and it's just boring in the show. And like the way that they, you know, have it to be like, oh, Spike's going to go out on his own because he doesn't want to risk his teammates. That's not at all how it happened. It was like, you know, he stumbled across this dude killing some senator, or not senator, whatever. And then Pierre was like, I'm going to kill you now. And so he sent an email to him and Spike's like, okay, cool. And he just goes. Right, right. And it's not like, you know, he's like, this seems interesting because he has no idea what he's up against, and that intrigues him. That's part of his character, right? And it, yeah, like, I don't know, that one just kind of made me sad.
Like a sad clown.
Exactly, a sad clown a go-go.
And in the end, the sound clown a go-go was you.
Yeah.
Oh man.
But no, doctor, I am sad clown.
Yeah, I hear you, man. I hear you. That it could have been done better, I think. And that's, or maybe could it? I mean, like, that's the question. Like, is there any way to do a live action Cowboy Bebop that works, that makes sense?
It would have to be really like weird and artsy, and I think that would make it so much better.
I think you're right, man. Or something crazy. And I want to get into that next. But hey, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. We'll be talking more about Cowboy Bebop here in just a moment. More great TV talk up in just a few minutes, but first, we got to pay a few bills. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
All right, man. So I've got a pitch for AKA what they should have done, right? Like how this could have been fixed, or not even fixed, but like a different path altogether with this. I think they should have taken a page out of Watchmen. Now, like, Watchmen was the quintessential graphic novel. It was the pinnacle of what you could tell storytelling in kind of graphic novel format for the time. And I think still celebrated in many respects as such. When it was made into a movie, there was a lot of questions as to whether or not it could be done well, because on the one hand, it's done in such a beautiful way that it does have a cinematic feel, but it was specifically created to be, to really push the envelope of what graphic novel storytelling was. And so you got Zack Snyder comes on board after the success of 300, taking that same kind of frame to frame approach to creating the comic to screen type of the panel to screen, if you will, approach to movie making, and made some decisions. There was a lot of folks a lot of things about the movie that we really enjoyed, a lot of moments that were like ripped directly from the comics that felt really good. But when it was off, when it was a different direction entirely, it somehow felt even worse, because you were doing all of the visual nods, all of the things to communicate that you were paying homage to what came before. But then when you take some of those big swings and try to make it your own in a different kind of way, it feels off and like a betrayal. And to some extent, I would argue that that's exactly what happened here. However, if we take a book from what happened later with Watchmen, with HBO's Watchmen, where they essentially told a sequel to Watchmen that nobody asked for, and yet they came in and like nailed it.
Man, that was a good show.
That was a fantastic show. Like, who would have thought that a sequel to Watchmen would be good? And it was fantastic. I would argue, Bell, I think something that would have been way more interesting is if we got a sequel, a live action sequel to Cowboy Bebop that followed Jet and Faye like on the Bebop, kind of reestablishing themselves, trying to kind of like pick themselves up after kind of the events, maybe a few years later. And kind of establish what that dynamic is, what that relationship is. And then over time, perhaps reveal some things as to whether or not, for example, Spike is still alive, whether or not, for example, Ed is out there or what she's up to. Then you could actually introduce an older Ed. And maybe like, it, you know, there's a lot of ways you could potentially take an older Ed too, whether or not she has, you know, some sort of mental kind of arrested development going on, or if, you know, like, who knows? Like, I'd be kind of curious to see what a serious take on an older Ed might be. So anyway, all that to say, I think that the path to something like this in the future for anybody that's considering making a live action adaptation for something that was at its pinnacle in its original format, don't remake. Like, tell a sequel.
Yeah.
Tell a sequel. You can go bold in sequels and nobody's going to be mad or feel betrayed. You know what I mean? Like, you can do that.
Yeah. And I mean, especially like, you know, you'd have to bring back Spike.
Of course.
But I think the thing there would be to, like, you know, let it linger. Is he alive? Like, maybe he's like working in the background and there's like hints leading up to his reveal. Kind of exactly what they did with the new Watchmen show. I'm going to end that conversation right there.
That's where we end that conversation right there. That's right. But that's, you know, exactly, but, right. Yes. Yes. And like that same pacing, I would even argue, would work perfectly.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think that'd be really cool. I think that'd be a cool idea. And, you know, cause like, I think you couldn't have Cowboy Bebop without Spike. But I think, you know,
well, so I think, but this is the thing, right? Like, you might say, like, how can you have Watchmen with, like, without Rorschach? But that's exactly what they did. You know what I mean? Like, with the sequel show on HBO. So, like, I think that if you've got a good enough story, then you can kind of challenge the kind of what's expected of a, you know, of said brand.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you know, I think, anyway, I just, that was the one thing I walked away from this thing. I think especially when they introduced Ed at the end, and I was like, oh, that, after everything that was so weird about the decisions they made with Julia and with Vicious and with Spike, it just, and honestly, where they all left things with Faye and Jed as well, I was just like, this all feels weird. And then they throw in, like, you know, adult Ed, or not adult, but like, I don't know how old she was, but like Ed in her 20s. And it was so over the top. It felt like she like popped out of like a PBS children's special or something.
That was like a teenager Ed, not like a.
It wasn't a kid. Like Ed, like
Ed's like 9 years old or something.
Right. She's supposed to be like this like crazy, like young genius.
Yeah. And this Ed was like, I don't know, 13, 14.
Yeah.
12, something like that. I don't know.
I don't know. Like it felt more like a quirky teenager maybe then, or maybe, I don't know. She seemed older. She seemed older than a teenager.
Yeah.
Actually, what the actor, we can look this up right now. What's the actress? I mean, like, I know that the actor and actress's name or age is not necessarily a guarantee.
Eden Perkins is the actress. I don't know. There's no like Wikipedia link or anything for her. So, but there could be an IMDb entry. The Netflix show is supposed to be 13, I think.
Gotcha. Well, I don't know. This one just seems, I don't know. It kind of like was the cherry on the weirdness top, or the, like the not quite rightness top that I felt at the end of the series. But that one episode, the prequel episode, I thought was good, which is why I was like, this is what you should do. You tell a prequel or tell a sequel, but don't do what this was. Please.
And I don't want to poop on it. Like I liked the first episode, Cowboy Gospel. You know, I liked Blue Crow Waltz, which was the second to last, the penultimate episode.
Yeah, that was really good. Yeah,
I liked, I think, Dark Side Tango episode 5. That was like Jet's backstory.
See, I thought that the anime did it better. Like, I actually, it just, the entire time I was watching, I was like, I kind of want to watch this episode on the anime.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you know, like I got that for a lot of those. But, you know, I thought that one was done well.
Okay. No, I mean, it was true. I mean, like, you know, it was true to the source material. And Jet was, I felt like, oh, so all right, this gets the whole thing, right? So Mustafa did a fantastic job, which, by the way, I didn't realize till just now that he was Bushmaster on Luke Cage. Dang it. I could do the voice, but I can't do the voice right now. But anyway, yeah, he was the villain on Luke Cage.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Season 2.
Okay.
Season 2.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, so yeah, so huh. But no, he was like, his portrayal was spot on. His story was almost anything but. And so it just felt so weird. So weird.
I know, like, and it sucks too, for, cuz like, I, you know, the actors and their portrayals were fantastic.
Yes.
Like, it was absolutely the best part. Like, I, John Cho, perfect for Spike.
Right.
Mustafa, perfect for Jet, and Daniela, like, it was a different characterization of Faye, which I think fine. Was fine. Yeah. I thought she did good. Like, I thought, like, you know, I thought that interpretation of the character, she had amnesia, you know, and she comes in and she's like, you know, yeah, I thought she did a great job. But it was just, I don't, the writing wasn't good. The story wasn't all that great.
Who wrote this thing? You know what? I never do. Who wrote this thing? I think it was a combination of things. I think the writing, as you mentioned, like is a major issue with this series. And then I would say the direction is a little confusing because there just seems to be kind of like a lot of like, I don't know. And honestly, while the casting was great, I don't know that the cast as a whole was great together. I don't think they had the chemistry that was really needed for this.
I thought Spike and Jet had pretty decent chemistry.
I don't know, man. I like there was a couple of scenes that felt a little forced. Like some scenes they got right, but some scenes I was just not feeling it.
What I don't understand though is why, like, you know, they're gonna end. They didn't get a second season, but they're gonna end it on like Jet and Spike being like, "Nah, we're not gonna be friends anymore."
Okay, so this was created by Christopher Yost, Thor: The Dark World.
Oh, he wrote Thor: The Dark World,
but he also wrote Thor: Ragnarok. So, like, what are you doing? Dadgummit, Yost, like, what? And he wrote several episodes of The Avengers: Earth's Mightiest Heroes. That was a great cartoon. What happened here? What happened? There was a who
he worked on The Mandalorian too. He was an executive consultant and a writer for it.
What happened here, man? Like something happened here. I don't know. I feel like there needs to be this seems like a series that was set up to win, but then was sabotaged somewhere along the way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like
this should have been a hit. Like, you know, I mean, at the same time, like I mentioned, it's an impossible feat to try to recreate the show. So I get that. I do get that. But like, this is such a weird fail.
Yeah. Yeah.
Such a weird fail. All right. Out of five, man, what do we give this?
I will give it a 2 because there were 2 episodes that I enjoyed.
I will give it a... Man, it's a full 0, I think, for me. This is like full-on skip. I hate to say it. I appreciate the love that is clearly in the DNA of this show. But man, like to some extent, it ruins the anime with the review.
No, it makes the anime better. Like it makes me watch the anime over and over again.
That is true. But what I mean is, if you've never, yes, you're right. It will, if you are a fan of the anime, it will immediately make you turn this off and go watch the anime and appreciate it even more. That's true. But if you were someone who has never watched the anime and you pick this up and this is your first like viewing of it, it like completely spoils some major elements of the anime and then goes on such a drastically different direction that feels so off. I mean, there's a reason I compare it to Watchmen, the film, and the decision to go with that movie with you know, Dr. Manhattan as kind of like the villain, you know, as opposed to the giant squid monster.
Yeah,
was so different. Like it was so different that when they made the sequel, they had to ignore the movie, even though the movie, like most of the people who I talked to who was watching the HBO series, didn't even read the comic. They were going based off of the movie because that's how, you know, like audiences were kind of seeing the two connected.
Yeah.
So everything squid related was completely, you know, they had that great setup episode. We'll talk about Watchmen sometime in the future. But anyway, so yeah, no, I think I feel as though if you've not seen the anime, this is a full skip. If you have seen the anime, it's worth putting on for about 5 minutes to remind you why you should be watching the anime. But like, that's it. I give it a full 0. I hate that I did. I was so looking forward to this movie or this series, man. But
I was watching it with Christy. Cause like I was hoping this would be, you know, an introduction to the universe. So I can be like, hey, you want to watch the anime now? We were watching episodes and, you know, we're talking about it. I said, what'd you think? He's like, it's okay. And like, I was kind of feeling the same way and I didn't want to, like, I wanted to be like, yeah, no, this is great, but I just couldn't. And so like, you know, I think it took me 3, like sessions to get through this. Right. We watched the first 3 episodes together. She didn't really seem interested in watching the rest of it. And so I was like, all right, well, I'll watch a couple more. Then I was like, I have to watch the anime again. I watched the anime. And then, I watched, a couple more episodes and each one, like after Sad Clown of Go-Go, I had to go watch Pierre LaFalle because I had to wash the taste out of my mouth. And then, you know, I finally watched the second to last episode. And I was like, okay, cool. But it was too late at night and I had to go to sleep. And I finally watched the last one. But I was kind of excited for the last episode after watching 9. But 10, I was like, okay, why did you do this to Julia? Like, I don't understand that.
Yeah.
Granted, not like Julia had a really better end in the anime, but like,
well, no. I mean, like, that's the thing. Like, it's you know, Julia's not really a fully embodied character in the anime. She's not supposed to be. Like, she's kind of seen as more of like a concept or like a like the green light in Great Gatsby. You know, like she is essentially that. So she's not a full character, and so I do understand like a desire, especially if you love the series and you kind of love that, like, man, what would it be like if like she was an actual character with actual agency, and like how would that change the universe? That's an interesting concept. I'm not arguing that it's not, but if you want to tell that story, go tell that story. Don't do a Cowboy Bebop where that happens.
Yeah,
because that's not who Joya is in Cowboy Bebop. Go tell your story. Again, I wanted to tell a story where Sam kills Rick. And so I wrote a play, a completely different universe with entirely new characters, and everything. Yes, highly inspired off of Casablanca. But I didn't go say, like, here's Casablanca, but where Sam kills Rick. Like, no, like that's I didn't market it as like, come see the Casablanca play and then like completely, you know, take a completely different direction with it. I don't know. That's anyway.
Yeah.
All right. I keep referencing my play. Someday, also spoilers for my play, if you ever see it or if it ever gets made.
Well, I hadn't seen Casablanca, so I don't really know who each of those characters are. But
oh, you've never seen Casablanca?
No, frankly, Bo, I don't give a damn.
And that's a different. Oh no.
Wait, no, that's Gone with the Wind.
That's Gone with the Wind. Anyway, all right, y'all. So that's all credibility out the window. Y'all, we want to know y'all's thoughts. Did you like Cowboy Bebop? Netflix Cowboy Bebop. Let us know. Explain it to us. Make a case. We'd love to hear what we missed, or if you happen,
please give me a reason to like this show, because I wanted to like it so bad, and we're not getting a second season, so it's not like it matters anyway.
I don't see where they have like the writing credits anywhere on like the Wikipedia page. Like, they're trying to like something. Did they forget to write it? That might be part of it.
What I don't understand is they had the same stunt team as John Wick, and like, you know, I get that John Cho's an older guy, but like, and that, you know, the fighting in the anime was like, you know, the choreography still applies with animated stuff, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, the animation of the choreography was just stunning in the anime. And then I get it that John Cho is an older guy, and that, like, you know, it's harder to do those kinds of martial arts and stuff.
I mean, Neo is not exactly a spring chicken. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. So, like, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
But
something happened here. I want a documentary investigation of like what happened to the live action Cowboy Bebop, because there's so much here that like this thing was set up to be. They had all the right people, but it's just missing something. I don't know. Yeah. Something happened here. I want to know what it is. If you know, let us know. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's we'll do an investigatory a podcast on who killed Cowboy Bebop. You know. Anyway. All right, y'all, thanks so much for this. Be sure to let us know your thoughts. TV Talk FM on the Twitters. You can find all of our contact information and more at tvtalk.fm. We're also rocking along with our Batcraft and Minecraft. Belle has just been recruited to a secret society, as I understand it.
Yes. Perhaps I haven't. It could be a secret.
No. Yeah, check the TV Talk YouTube channel for updates there. And I think that's going to do it for us for today. So don't worry. We'll be back in a flash.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.